Good evening. This is Lesbian Nation, back in your living room or bedroom. I've got a lot of announcements to make tonight about the different cultural events going on in the city. So while you race around the house looking for a piece of paper and a pencil, I'm going to play you a little lesbian music from the new album Lavender Jane.
I heard Cheryl and Mary say there are two kinds of people in the world today. One or the other, a person must be. The men are them, the women are we.
Now, if any of you want to get that album, I suggest you go down to Labrys Bookstore at 33 Barrow Street. Now for the other announcements. From January 16th through January 20th at 8:30 p.m., there's going to be, films, videotapes, and photos by, about, and for women at the Open Mind Gallery, 66 Green Street, between Broome and Spring. It's called Women for Women, an event by Amazon Media Project. And the films include things like Amazon Weekend, Near the Big Chakra, The Emerging Women, Holding, Lesbian Mothers, Lesbianism, Feminism, so on. On January 18th through the 21st, and again on the 25th through the 28th, Because I Said So, a cathexis by Myrna Lamb, It's directed by Marjorie DeFazio at the Women's InterArts Center, 549 West 52nd Street. And that was actually going on this weekend for four nights, and it'll be going on the next two weekends, Friday through Monday. For reservations, call 246-6570. Now, I have to confess to you that I'm really partial to this play and to Myrna's work in general. So partial that I volunteered to be house manager for free for the 12 nights of the performance, and that means I sit there and take tickets and usher people in and pass out the wine glasses. Then, when the play goes on, I sit backstage, and I have to laugh, because it's howlingly funny, and it's unusually well acted, and this work hits at those little dark corners in everybody's psyche that we all wish to hell weren't there. So I urge you to all come down and take tickets from me. On Thursday night of this week, January 17th, there's another program called Women for Women. This is sponsored by NOW, and NOW, a little help from our friends, a marathon performance of the works of women playwrights, poets, and composers, co-produced by Myrna Lamb and Gaby Rogers. And just to help you get on over there, I'm going to be reading some of my poetry. It's at Town Hall, 123 West 43rd Street. And if you want to reserve seats, I suggest you call now. Oh yes, the performance starts at 8 p.m. this Thursday night. Here's a political event for you. On Saturday, January 26th at 3 p.m., they haven't announced the place yet, there's going to be a meeting of the Gay Rights Action Coalition. The Gay Rights Action Coalition has formed to demand an end to our second-class citizenship by building a swelling gay demand for a gay civil rights bill. To find out where the meeting takes place, call 691-0858. Also this coming weekend, Friday, January 18th, and Saturday, January 19th, It's All Right to Be Woman Theater presents Wherever You Land, That's Who You Are, a work in progress about some of our roles and how we got them. This is at St. Peter's Episcopal Church, 346 West 20th Street, between 8th and 9th Avenue. Time, 8 p.m. Donation of $2 requested. There's limited seating, so you better get there a little early. The Friday performance is for women and men, the Saturday performance for women only. On Saturday and Sunday, the 19th and 20th, there's an awful lot going on this coming weekend, New York State NOW will conduct a conference on marriage and divorce at the Hotel Commodore. The hours of the conference are 10 to 5 on Saturday and 9 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Conference participants will be charged an entrance fee of $10, but those who cannot afford this amount will be given consideration. Persons wishing to pre-register should mail $10 to Pat McQuillan, 240 East 76th Street, New York 21. Registration will also be conducted 8:45 to 10 a.m. on Saturday. That's at the Hotel Commodore. Anyway, I don't want anyone calling me up and complaining that they haven't got a thing to do. So now we're going to proceed with the second part of an interview, which I promised you last week, with Florence Kennedy of the Feminist Party, the National Black Feminist Organization, and other unholy alliances.
I'm sure that since you've had this radio show, there have been women who came to you and said, look, you're ripping off the movement, you're a star, you're on an ego trip, and all this kind of stuff. And you see, I think that if we analyze the pathology of oppression, which I started to do in a book which is now on the shelf, and which sooner or later, I suppose, will come out, I guess. But I think if we begin with the worthlessness that oppressed people come to feel about themselves, and I think that the oppression could be either personal, private, public, or political. In other words, some people have a low sense of worth because their parents weren't particularly good to them, and maybe their parents weren't good to them because they themselves were unhappy or poor or neglected or unhappily married or not married or whatever that may be. So there's that whole group of people who are personally oppressed, maybe within the political context, but in any case, unhappy people. So unhappy people tend to have a broader sense of cruelty in some cases. I always think it's something like if an alcoholic had 8 children. 2 would be social drinkers, 2 would be non-drinkers, 2 might be alcoholics. So in other words, in every oppressed community, you have some exceptionally sainted, good, angelic people, usually with a lot of hostility and anger underneath their saintliness, but at least as far as their acting out is concerned, they're very, very sweet and good. Then you have a couple of people who are political, but really vicious and unhappy. Now, see, my theory is you really ought to try to kick the largest tail within the area. But if a small tail gets in your way, you're supposed to take care of business in the most appropriate way. So I think it's important to have a bad reputation in terms of not taking anything off anybody, you see. But at the same time, try to save your vendettas, your long-range actions, for big enemies. So in other words, I don't accept the idea that these unpleasant, powerless, offensive people running in the street are my enemy, because they have no power, and the only reason that they need to be dealt with is if they should personally do something specifically to me or the woman that they're involved with. My idea of an MCP doesn't even include Norman Mailer. For my money, Norman Mailer is a Frankfurter, a piglet, you understand? In other words, he earns his money from, you know, sort of, in my opinion, going around with his literary zipper down and his little, what do you call it, sitting up on his lap. And I always want to throw a baby blanket or a towel over his lap, because to me, it's true he makes a lot of money, but he is not a pig because he has no power except to make a fool of himself and get well paid for it.
Seems to me it would be more appropriate to throw a postage stamp in his lap.
Right. Well, I throw the baby blanket because I like other people to think maybe there's something under it.
This leads me to make a point that we've been trying to make in the feminist party, and that is to make the distinction between women and feminists.
Here, here.
Okay? I'd like Flo to say something about
that. Well, you do it first, okay?
Oh, okay.
Because I keep taking more time.
No, that's okay. Just as the man at the cocktail party is obnoxious and just sort of gets in our way and is a nuisance, you know, doesn't hinder us greatly, but is a nuisance, we feel the same way about women who are anti-feminists. We don't love all women because they're born female. We don't even love all of our best friends all the time, you know, and it's good to recognize that. But mainly, you know, it's important to recognize that not all women are on our side, and we're not all on their side.
I like, Martha, to make the analogy between the feminist movement and the jockocratic scene, such as the football game or a tennis match. You go to Forest Hills, there are only two or four or six people on the courts. And if you add the referees and all those people, you might have 100 people at most. But then you have 25,000 people in the stands, or more or less. The point is that we feminists are like the team. We're like the football team. We're like the tennis players. And we don't want the audience down on the courts, frankly. You know, because frankly, if they don't know what they're doing, many a football fan could not make an end run. And I use these jockocratic concepts because that's where the heads of so many Americans are. But we are the ones who need to plan our strategy. And this idea of calling everyone into the field to be a part of everything, I think really slows us down, because I really feel that, at first place, I want it clearly understood that people like Rosemary Gunning and Louise Day Hicks, these racist women who are threatening black women, and we haven't even started talking about the National Black Feminist Organization or the Black Feminists, but one of the reasons I think that black women were hesitant to come into feminism was racism. And I think the average feminist is less racist than most women, but she looks exactly like those racist women who in Pontiac, Michigan, led by people like Irene the Idiot McCabe, are challenging the black women just because they want to bring their kids in to sit in the same schoolroom with the white trash, not so much because they think the white trash don't possibly have a head full of lice or whatever they may have, but because, you know, the school may leak less and the book may be 3 years, you know, more modern. So in other words, these white trash think that the black women are coming to marry off their kids, you know. And frankly, I think nowadays black consciousness is raised to the point where black people don't even want to be white people, even if it meant, you know, having a split level hell to live in. But the fact still remains that the feminist woman is still, in my opinion, too all-inclusivistic. And I think we ought, after 5 years, to stop worrying about the women who are running around saying, I'm not for women's lib, you know. I figure if they can't say the whole word after 5 years, who in the world needs them? They're cupcakes. Leave them over there, you know,
on the shelf.
f***ing away at this hypocrisy, because a lot of people think that's the only way you can get ahead.
I ran into a little problem recently along those lines, which was I was sitting around talking with some friends around Christmas, and this one woman who has put me down a number of times for what I'm doing, because she would never get up in public and say she's a lesbian. Well, I told her that I had run into some guy in this judo class who I thought was sort of attractive. Now, you know, this was a big concession for me to say mm-hmm. that, you know, here is some male that I found physically attractive.
Being a friend of, or even saying a good word about.
Yeah, so she got all upset over the idea that I might go to bed with him, and that this would be a betrayal of the movement. And I am supposed to be up there on the line representing the movement, representing her, really, because she's not going to get up and speak for herself. If I even think of doing something that doesn't fit into her idea of what a
committed
lesbian feminist revolutionary should be, I am betraying her.
Well, don't you think, though, that's the way women treat their daughters and their sisters a lot? I mean, within even happy families, you find this sense of jealousy where people say, you are brave, you go downstairs. I remember when we were little, we saw the Phantom of the Opera. I'm 57, so this is in an era that you all wouldn't remember. But in its original, you know, state, we saw Lon Chaney films and all. And everybody in the house would be afraid to go downstairs. And our bathroom was downstairs. There was these dark stairs you had to go down. And they knew I wasn't afraid, so I always had to go downstairs. And yet, sometimes, my family aren't this bad, but very often the same family that wants you to be the out front brave person resents, number one, that you are out front and that you are something of a star in a very small galaxy, to be sure, but they also resent any effort on your part to humanize your condition or anything else. Now, I think the lesbian situation in the feminist movement is such an interesting opportunity to observe horizontal hostility and the pathology of oppression. In the first place, the pedestal concept is what has kept a lot of women, quote unquote, good, cupcakes, daddy's little girls, you know. Now, it seems that then if you're an inch off the pedestal, you're in the boiling water. And among the people that are in the boiling water in the female community are the lesbians, are the prostitutes, are the unwed mothers, are the welfare women. And these are women that, in addition to the lesser pedestal peripherals, such as the women who have no children. See, guilt is the essence of oppression. And if for you to consent to oppression, which we all do if we don't die fighting against it in varying degrees, we are accepting oppression and consenting to oppression because we feel guilty. Now, once we get the good girl status established, you know, you ooch out all the kids because that's what good women do, and you don't fight back when the car is on your ankle, and you don't scratch the paint for fear it may not belong to the person that drove it on, and all this kind of noble niggerhood, which is what I call it. But anyway, when you have that kind of situation, you have all these good people that are resenting the person who is even the smallest star. It's what I call the piranha attack. One person gets even one inch out of the barrel that the rest of the crayfish are in, the crawdads are in, then, or crabs, I guess it is, the crabs that aren't moving pull that person down. And yet, if there's any danger, they want to send that person out. So you see, the pathology is that contradiction you're talking about. She wants you to be the purest of lesbianism on her behalf, while she cowers back in the closet or under the rug or in the executive suite or wherever she is and criticizes you. But the criticism is out of hostility. You see, because mixed with her pride in you and admiration for you is hostility, because she's anxious that you may get her in trouble. She won't be a cupcake anymore. Somebody may discover her. And she's proud of you because she knows that you're reducing the possibility of pressure on her. But she's resentful of you because she's worth nothing and you're in her image, so you're worth nothing. We're all niggers, so how do you get ahead? You understand? And it's this complication that we have not analogized even to the black situation, and we could learn a lot by looking at the black situation, at the Indian movement, you know, and even at the situation in mental hospitals. All the niggers of any group are people that we are embarrassed about, we feel guilty about. Women feel guilty about lesbians. In other words, there's the syndrome where you're breaking up with a husband, for example, and he says, you have a girlfriend, and he says, oh, I guess you're making it with her. In other words, every woman is potentially a lesbian. And women are cowering that aren't even occasionally involved in lesbianism in such. But then the question is, what is a lesbian? Is a virgin a lesbian? She's never had a man, you see. So it's just so anti-intellectual the way we deal with these things. We try to deal with them politically. And actually, they really need some serious, you know, consideration. And most people don't even talk about them in a serious way except in their political implication. But there's very, very much more to it.
Well, I think that part of the problem is not what one is, but what one says. When I was discussing this possibility, somebody else who was in the room said, well, look, you know, if you want to go to bed with this guy, if you want to try it out after, you know, these various years
of... They're going to give you a license now.
you know, do it, but keep your mouth shut. For Christ's sake, don't say it on the radio. So I said, well, that wouldn't be in accordance with my principles, because one thing that is accordance with my principles, whether I am what I have been for the past 4 years, which is exclusively gay, or whether I turn, you know, whether I decide to take off with my next door neighbor's collie dog, is that I want to be on the outside to the world what I am on the inside.
Well, why go into the closet of heterosexuality any more than to go into the closet of homosexuality? Because it's the closet that makes it pathological and not the change of appetite. I mean, I'm sure that many people who were reared to eat only a kosher diet have changed, and now they eat ham and bacon, which isn't all that hot anymore, but at least they do it. And for them to be a closet kosher dietary committed person, I don't know what that sentence ever came out to be, but anyway, you understand what I'm trying to say. And I think that it's the outfrontness that is the rejection of oppression. And many people will say, do anything you want, don't let it be known. Screw anybody you want, don't get pregnant. And I think the liberation, in part, is the right to say what's going on. And I think one of the things that I think that I have find as a limitation on the lesbian community is the need to be committed, you know, to an appetite or to a practice or to a custom or a way of life or a culture. And I think as laudable as the lesbian woman is for being in the vanguard, because my respect for the lesbian community arises in part out of the fact that the lesbian woman rejected the cupcake role, and very often, in comparison to the woman at large, the lesbian woman was very often a self-supporting woman. She tended very often to be a more independent woman. She tended more often to be an aesthetic woman because she was a leader. She rejected the cupcake role. And I think that one of the reasons for the jealousy within some of the more timid organizations of the lesbian is, again, that jealousy and the recognition that as an independent they could be dangerous because they would become leaders and they wouldn't be able to control the whole thing. We really think it's important for women to understand that while lesbianism is a choice of a way of life for some people, it's something that every feminist must embrace, just like we must all be against anything that divides women. It doesn't mean that every woman has to be a feminist, but a feminist, I think...
You mean a lesbian?
I mean, I meant that every woman doesn't have to be a feminist, but every feminist has to embrace lesbianism, in my opinion. I don't want to have to say I'm not an unwed mother, I'm not a prostitute, I'm not a lesbian. I want to say that the lesbian woman is a woman that I seriously embrace. If I reject a racist woman, it's because of her thinking, which I think is contradictory to humanism. But lesbianism is not contradictory to humanism. So a woman who is a lesbian has to not only be accepted and embraced physically or otherwise, but she must be really an issue. Lesbianism to me is a feminist issue, in addition to the lesbian women being recognized by me anyway as leaders.
Well, I think I've had to redefine lesbian in my own life recently, because I was trying to re-examine these definitions, having discovered a stray impulse in myself that didn't fit along with my program. Mm.
But I think it's really hard to be a part of a society. In other words, I feel that I'm anti-religious, but I'm always saying, Jesus Christ, and oh my God. In other words, it's difficult to be a part of any culture and reject completely that culture, because it got to you before you even got your philosophy straight. So I think that if a person who is a committed lesbian or anti-racist or anything else, you know, slides back into what they see as a pathological role, it shouldn't be taken so seriously, for heaven's sakes, you know.
Well, even, you know, it isn't even a question of a pathological role.
The female condition is a pathological role, in my opinion.
But it occurred to me that, you know, having read a lot of the lesbian theoretical articles, we talk about the woman-identified woman, we talk about women who love women, and to me, right now, that seems like an ideal. Like, for me to fully love myself is something that I have not yet reached, and I'm the one who knows that best. For me to be able to fully love other women, you know, it comes out of the same thing. If I can't love myself fully, I can't love other women fully. And all the times I feel bad about myself that come out of my oppression and my condition in this society, I can't say I have fully reached my ideal. So I'd have to say that right now there aren't any women who live up to the, you know, Amazon ideal, but that we are able at this point to kind of articulate it, to talk about it.
This program has been on recording. If you think I'm hanging around the station waiting for angry phone calls, you've lost your cookies. I'll be back next week with more of Flo Kennedy and more controversial topics to stir your blood. Please note that next week, due to bleep-ups by the authorities and powers that be at this station, I'll be on at 9:30 p.m., and I will make announcements of further changes in schedule at that time. Please send all complaints to Lesbian Nation, WBAI, 359 East 62nd Street, New York, New York. My name is Martha Shelley. Good night.